Penguin Random House Audio presents Murder Road by Simone St. James. Read for you by Brittany Presley. For anyone who was told they're weird because they read too much, because you're not, and you don't. Chapter 1. That July night seemed full of possibility, with the empty highway stretching out before us. I had just woken up from a nap in the passenger seat, my head foggy as I remembered where we were. I took off my flip-flops and pulled my bare legs up, crossing them and running my hands through my hair. The digital clock on the dash said it was 2 a.m, and the road didn't look like the same road we'd been on when I fell asleep. I wondered where we were going. There was no way I would fall asleep again. "We're lost," I said. Eddie glanced over at me from the driver's seat.
"I don't think so. We took a wrong exit, that's all. I'll get us back on the interstate."
I looked out the window at the narrow country road, lined with dark trees, and thought we were definitely lost. But the truth was, I didn't care. I was riding at night in Eddie Carter's Pontiac, which had a front seat like a sofa. It was July of 1995, and I was 26 years old. I was here because Eddie and I were on our honeymoon. We had been married just over 24 hours. We were headed for a motel that was a cluster of cabins on the shore of Lake Michigan. We'd budgeted enough money to stay exactly 5 nights. We planned to swim, play Scrabble, barbecue burger patties on the rusty charcoal grill, drink half-warm beer from a cooler, swim some more, then go to bed. Repeat 5 times, and then we'd make our way home to the small apartment we rented together in Ann Arbor. And Eddie would go back to work fixing cars, and I'd go to my job at the bowling alley. We'd both go to work every day. Then we'd come home and have dinner. That was probably one of 6 kinds of sandwich. And then we'd go to bed. Repeat every day, forever. I glanced over at Eddie. He was frowning, concentrating on the road. His brown hair had grown out since he left the army, though he still kept it short. He was wearing a light gray t-shirt and worn jeans. He wasn't a huge man, but he was sleekly muscled, and his biceps were hard under the sleeves of his t-shirt, his physical presence at odds with his quiet, studious expression. At 27, he was a year older than me, though he seemed much more mature. As I looked at those biceps, it hit me yet again that I had married a man instead of a boy. Married. I had to toss the phrases around in my head, trying to get used to them. I married him. We got married. Eddie married me. I am his wife. We are a married couple. The words still felt strange. "Do you want me to pull the map from the glove box?" I asked him.
"I think I know where we are," Eddie said. "Roughly, at least. Something about this is familiar. I think we're heading south. There should be a turnoff to get back on the interstate."
"Are you tired?" The question seemed to amuse him.
"No."
Right. He'd slept in all kinds of weird places, at weird times, while he was overseas. I didn't know the details of what he'd done in Iraq. He didn't talk about it much. But I'd seen Eddie say he was going to sleep for exactly 1 hour, and then do it, as if his brain had a timer. It was one of his mysteries. I leaned forward and turned on the radio, twisting the dial and watching the needle move along the numbers. Most of the stations around here were off the air at this time of night, and much of the dial was static. I finally found some country music that wavered in and out of existence, like a ghost passing from room to room. "Haunted Cowboys," I said, as a man's voice warbled patchily into the silence of the car. "Dead 100 years and still trying to drink whiskey and find a woman." Eddie smiled. He was the only person I'd ever met who liked my jokes.
"Don't worry, April,"
he said, which was a little strange because I wasn't worried. Or was I? I looked out the window again. It was pitch dark out there, not a street light or lit window in sight. A three-quarter moon hung low and crisp in the sky. It was the kind of night that wasn't suffocatingly hot, but if you slept with the window open, you'd wake up with clammy skin and damp, chilled sheets. You'd stay tucked in bed until sunrise, when it started to get hot again. "There's no one out there," I said. "It's like we launched into space."
"Not true," Eddie pointed. "There's someone right there."
Sure enough, through the trees, a light glowed. Low at first, then brighter, lighting in a smooth flow. It wasn't the flip of a switch or a flashlight. It took me a moment to place it, but it seemed more like someone turning up a kerosene lamp, making the flame go higher. Was it inside a house? Or someone outside in the trees? I couldn't tell. I watched the light as we passed it, turning as it shrank behind us. I should have felt comforted, but I wasn't. "What was that?" I asked, as the country music on the radio changed tunes, then wafted out of range again.
"Beats me,"
Eddie said.
"Look, we'll give it another 10 minutes. If we don't see a sign, we'll..." Oh, Jesus.
I turned back to face front, and I saw what he saw. In the beam of the headlights was a man at the side of the road. A teenager, maybe. He wore a baggy jacket and was walking slowly, his head down. As our headlights hit his back, he didn't turn. Eddie slowed the car so we didn't pass him, but kept him in our headlight beams.
"Drunk, do you think?"
he asked me. I watched the figure take another slow, careful step. He still didn't turn our way, though we must have been the only car to come down this road for a long time. On second look, he was small for a man, and I noticed jeans that flared at the bottom. "I think that's a woman," I said.
"Could be."
Eddie kept the car at a crawl, inching behind her. There was something strange about the way she didn't turn, but there was also something pathetic about it.
"She could still be drunk," Eddie said.
"Maybe," I said.
"She might need help. Should we stop?"
I thought about the light we'd passed behind us, and something cold touched my spine. "I think she needs help."
"All right. Roll down your window."
I cranked the window down as Eddie pulled up beside the figure. He leaned across me as the car slowly rolled, his voice sounding friendly and authoritative.
"Hi there. Do you need help?"
he called out my window. For the first time, the figure paused and lifted her head. It was a woman, with brown hair cut short, exposing her ears and the back of her neck, while bangs fell over one eye. Her skin was pale, and I could see a faint spray of freckles across the bridge of her nose. She stopped walking and turned our way, squaring her shoulders as if she'd just noticed us. She didn't speak.
"Do you need some help?"
Eddie asked again.
"We can drop you somewhere."
The woman looked at me. I gave her a smile and a wave. I hoped it made her feel better. A lot of people thought I was pretty. They used the word pretty, not beautiful. I was high school yearbook kind of pretty, not the kind of beautiful that made men crazy. Still, before Eddie, I'd been asked out all the time. There's no accounting for taste.
"You can get in,"
I told the woman. Or girl? It was hard to tell in the dark.
"We're nice people, I promise."
The girl had fixed her gaze on me, as if Eddie wasn't there. "I shouldn't," she said. Her voice was soft and low, like she was making an effort. Of course she was wary. It was the middle of the night. The girl wove in place, and I put my hand on my car door handle, thinking I might get out and help her. Eddie put his hand on my knee, halting me. I looked at him. He shook his head. Staying where I was, I turned back to the girl.
"We're heading for the Five Pines Resort," I said, giving the name of the cheap motel Eddie and I were.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?